You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Broadway, Broadway, in all of its glory, we all have a memory, we all have a story. Was there an understudy, or did the show stop? Did you see Barbara before she shot to the top? Join us as we revel in a reverie, it's my Broadway memory.
Michael, should we bring on our guests for this evening? I am so excited and I can't believe this lineup.
Brian, I'm just smashed you asked.
We could get smashed tonight.
Honestly, why not? Okay, so we have Mark Shaman, one of my personal heroes. Buckle your seatbelts, everyone, because...
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
This bio is, it's just unbelievable. He is an award-winning composer, lyricist, orchestrator, and musician. Recently, Mark co-wrote the songs and composed the score for the director, for director Rob Marshall and Disney's Mary Poppins Returns, the sequel to the classic film Mary Poppins. He's Oscar nominated 7 times for Mary Poppins Returns, Sleepless in Seattle, Patch Adams, The First Wives Club, The American President, and South Park, Bigger, Longer, Uncut, one of my favorite movies in the world. He wrote music for some of my favorite other movies like Beaches, First Wives Club, and Hocus Pocus, orchestrated that amazing music. And Broadway musical credits are the Tony Award winning Hairspray, Tony nominated Martin Short, Fame Becomes Me, Tony winning Catch Me If You Can, and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. He has done Peter Allen, Up in One, Bette Midler's Divine Madness, Ellie Greenwich's Leader of the Pack, and Patti LuPone on Broadway. He wrote Smash. He's co-produced and arranged Grammy-winning recordings for music icons like Bette Midler, Harry Connick Jr., Mariah Carey, and including the Grammy-winning recordings Wind Beneath My Wings and From a Distance. He's written for SNL in his collaboration with Bette Midler, one of my favorite performances of all time, for her Emmy-winning appearance as his final guest on the Johnny Carson's penultimate Tonight Show. It's one of my favorites.
You weren't kidding with that bio. Awesome.
No, it's, and there's so much more. It's steel. It's amazing.
And our other phenomenal guest, Megan Hilty, is most recognizable for her portrayal of seasoned triple threat Ivy Lynn in NBC's musical drama Smash. Most recently, she starred as Patsy Cline in Lifetime's original movie Patsy and Loretta, for which she earned a Critics' Choice Award nomination for her performance. Other credits: Wicked, 9 to 5, Noises Off, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes.
And please welcome Mark Shaman and Megan Hilty. Hello.
Hello.
How
are you guys doing?
I'm dead that you guys are here. Thank you for being here so much. Thank you.
Thanks.
You don't have to travel, so it's good. How are you guys doing tonight?
Where are you both self-isolating or whatever stage we're in right now?
Yeah. Seriously.
Mark, you want to go first?
I'm in upstate New York, which it's really downstate New York, but it's up from Manhattan. And that's where I basically have been since this whole thing started. I've barely left the house.
Good for you.
I can't, I have these in-ears and I'm not going to use them. They're just hideous. I'm going to put on my old fashioned headphones.
Get rid of them.
Those in-ears. It's like,
do you have the molds though? Do you have them? Like, did you?
Yeah, I just haven't had a chance to really use them.
Oh, okay.
That's okay.
Where are you? Where are you?
Megan, where are you?
I'm in Los Angeles. I apologize to everyone we're having some construction done. I didn't know they were coming today. I thought
that was your stomach.
So there's like a chainsaw.
You know, it's really a nice soundtrack for this event.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. One would say that they're smashing into your walls, but that's the last pun I'm going to make. No, I swear.
I'm done. Since we've been in LA since the beginning. We've barely left the house. I am now a full-time, well, I was a kindergarten teacher. Now I'm a first grade teacher we're starting to buckle down and do that. We have this little, garage that we converted. It was essentially our little guest house, but now since no guests will be coming, we're now transforming it into a classroom. We're like fully going into it, like, so that we have like a space. This is my life now. Like, my life is completely different.
But I'd like to picture you're like Bernadette Peters and Pennies from Heaven. She's a, you know, 1930s school teacher.
Sure. Keep that image. Yes, that's exactly.
Love is good for anything that ails you. Oh yeah.
I for some reason, just because of the situation, I'm just imagining a Miss Hannigan situation. Just like, oh, just like some gin right before class. No one's gonna know. They're in first grade. It's fine.
There's that like famous meme that went around like when all this started, saying that like I'm gonna misquote it. I shouldn't even be saying it, but it alluded to the fact that all the teachers had a drinking problem now, meaning
yes.
All of these.
Oh, adults, it was
to be teachers are now drinking to get through.
It was like job. In 30 years, the people who are running the country are going to be people who were brought up by alcoholics as teachers, something like that. Yeah,
that's hysterical. Well, I mean, just you. I really, we just have to treat ourselves kindly during this time. Life has turned upside down, and just, you know. If you want some gin, have some gin. What do I gotta say? You know, if it's gonna make you smile.
Do you both have playbills? That's the next question.
That's the next question.
I do. Do you have any, Mark?
No, because
that's okay.
It's just like a weekend house. It's become like the Lifetime house.
Quite all right. I've got a couple that I think you were had something to do with.
And also, I just have a bunch of questions for you. I mean, I'm such an admirer and lover of both of your work. I mean, you know, Mark, my mom and my grandfather, who's no longer with us, both, that was the father-daughter dance at my parents' wedding, was Wind Beneath My Wings. So that song is extremely, I mean, so much of your music is very, very, very important to myself and my family. So this is like special.
Thank you. I mean, I was a co-arranger and co-producer. I didn't write that song. If I did, I'd be, well, I wouldn't be talking to you.
No,
I mean, I'd be living on some, I don't know. My God, can you imagine writing that song? Those guys. I mean, can you imagine having written that song?
I know that you didn't write it, but you are responsible for the song and the sounds. Yeah.
Somewhere there's even a recording of Bette singing the vocal and literally going, did you ever know that Mark Shaman, you're leading me down the garden path, making me sing the song, and I will never let you forget it. I keep wishing I could find that take in a vault somewhere.
Oh, me too.
Is there?
I'd love to hear that.
Now, is there a certain, like, I like hearing things that, like, you're not really, that you don't really talk about much or whatever, but, you know, I have questions up the wazoo, but is there a memory that you have that's like where Bette Midler said that to you in recording that's at the top where you'll never forget that? If you could get that tattooed on your body, that moment, what would that be for you?
Well, that's one of them. But Megan, do you have one?
Inappropriate quotes that you would tattoo on your body. That's
cool. No, not
no.
Well, not really inappropriate quotes.
No, I know, but I'm interested in, you know, the inappropriate ones.
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
We'll circle back to that.
Yeah.
Before we get to our playbill memories, we have some questions from our followers on Instagram at My Broadway Memory. For those watching, if you ever have any questions for our guests, please just put them in the chat and we will, we always ask them on our social beforehand and we could play them the day of, like we're going to do now. So this question is for Megan from Alana S. What made you choose There's Always Tomorrow for your Christmas album? I love it, by the way.
Oh, thank thank you. So we're a huge Christmas family, just holiday family in general, but like we decorate for Christmas on November 2nd, our wedding anniversary every year. And we have everything up for about 2.5 months of the year. And one of my favorite movies is that the Rankin-Bass stop motion Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And I always sang There's Always Tomorrow to my kids. And so it just seemed, I don't know, it seemed totally natural to put that into our little intimate Christmas album and concert tour.
Oh.
Yeah.
I love that. Thank you. And that's actually a really great segue, because this also has to do with holidays. This question is for Mark from David L. And I also really want to know this as well. So what was it like writing music for Hocus Pocus? Did you think it would be a big hit cult classic? It's August and I've already started watching it. So holidays are here, apparently.
Well, once again, I must correct. I'm sorry. I only arranged one song. I arranged, actually wrote some new lyrics for I Put a Spell on You. That was my only gig on that movie, was just on that one song. But that's what people remember. It was fantastic. I went into a rehearsal with the ladies and Kenny Ortega, with the director. I just my memory is just us all around the piano, and just me coming up with new lyrics that fit, you know, the story about, you know, what is it? She's vicious. I can't remember any of it. I can't remember anything.
I could tell you them.
I'm your worst guess. I can't remember anything. But yeah, if there's lyrics that aren't from the original song, I kind of wrote them that day at the piano, and then we were recording, and I knew I needed to make it kind of like a Bette Midler arrangement. And who knew? And now they're like kids, you know, like Jay Armstrong, you know, he was a standby for Aaron in Catch Me If You Can, never got to go on. But he does a gig every year in drag.
Oh, yeah.
And he sings that song. And I finally, like 2 years, I said, you know, I wrote those special lyrics and I arranged that. You know, he didn't even know. So, I mean, there's a whole generation of people I've worked with who have no idea of the many years.
Mark, to tie that in, actually, I do the production and the promo photos for Jay's show. So I've seen it every single year. And it is, if anyone has I don't know what he'll do virtually, if he'll do it virtually this year, but it is one of the most amazing self-produced projects in the world. I mean, the costumes by David and the make, I mean, it is like the right out of the movie, and the song, it's such a brilliant concert. Ugh, I wish it was happening this year.
Michael, what do you say we show them how to do the Playbill gig?
Yes, I'm obsessed with that idea. Because, you know, I could just ramble and ask all these questions, these very, very niche questions, like what made you come up with the spell in that song? Like, how did you come up with those lyrics? But we'll talk about that later. So I have like, nine big ones. So I'm just gonna, what I like to do.
Where did you get them from? These are from your grandparents and your parents?
No, these are shows that I've seen.
Good Lord.
Wow. My Broadway memory, honey.
We're serious.
Must be just a memory. That's a lot of money.
It's funny that you say that, because, you know, I didn't, growing up, this is what I did. That was my Hanukkah presents. That was what I saved up for. That was like, I didn't want toys. I didn't need this. I didn't need that. I wanted to go see shows. I wanted to go to New York and see shows. That was what I got my kicks. So, and I learned how to do it at a young age when, you know, seeing Tarzan in 2006 was $20 for a student rush ticket. Now it's not, but you know, $20 for a Broadway show sitting in the orchestra ain't too bad. And you kind of figure out when you're a kid how to sort of go around it. And I don't know. It just was like, that's where I needed my money to go, was seeing the shows, because that's where I felt the most home, you know, was Broadway. You get it. Okay, so I'm literally just going to go like that and
like
just
that.
Pick. Okay, I'm gonna do this one because now we're going to get completely random, and it's actually my favorite musical of all time. So I'm really glad that I landed on that. And this was the 06-07 revival. This is the production when it was at the Broadhurst. And it was the first time I believe I had seen it professionally. So I was really excited. I mean, this cast was amazing. And, you know, it was the last time I think I had, no, I saw twice in the West End before they had changed the full production. But I have my ticket. I saw it with my grandma. I sat.
Student Rush, it says.
Student Rush, Mez J18, which is house right of the Broadhurst. And I went with my grandma, and I didn't even know. That's amazing. It was Ali Ewell. It was Ben Crawford and Harada. I can't really see. Adam Jacobs. It was just such an... I loved seeing it
was
so
it
much.
Everything that you thought the Broadway production should be of Les Mis, sitting there in the audience?
It was different just because, you know, I grew up with the White Album and grew up obsessed with Frankie Raphael and Randy Graff and everyone. So it was different just hearing different voices, and it already had been a revival, so it had changed. You know, there was a different sort of feel to it. And I was just so happy to be there and so ecstatic. And, you know, what's funny is I was going to show you this, but I do have a Mary Poppins tattoo right here.
Actual tattoo.
Wow.
That's an actual tattoo. She leads me in the right direction. That's why she's that way. But I have a Les Mis tattoo, right here, which is One Day More in French in Victor Hugo's handwriting, but he never wrote the phrase. So I found his manuscripts and I pieced together his letters to form it.
It's impressive.
That's intense.
That is very intense.
It's scary.
I know. You're all like, what, okay, next.
What other show us the back of the playbill. What other shows were happening at the...
Oh, I was afraid you were about to say, show us the back of you. Tattoos back there.
What's your best mark?
Just giving you fame. Okay, so we have, what are some Charlotte and Chorus Line ad? We love.
Wow.
We love. But we have on the Broadway at this time is Chorus Line, Avenue Q, Beauty and the Beast, Chicago, Curtains, Deuce, Frost Nixon, Grey Gardens, Hairspray, Inherit the Wind, Jersey Boys, Legally Blonde, Les Mis, Mamma Mia, Mary Poppins, Old Acquaintance, 110 in the Shade, Rent, Spamalot, Spelling Bee, Spring Awakening, Tarzan, Color Purple, Drowsy, Lion King, Phantom of the Opera, Your Magical Thinking, Wicked, Xanadu.
Oh, some gems in there.
So, okay, so enough with me. Let's, Megan, would you like to do yours?
So I have a bunch of those folders too, but they're all in storage. But I did have a bunch here.
In your classroom.
In my classroom. But I'm not supposed to look at them. How am I not supposed to look?
Oh, you could do whatever you want. You could look at them.
I got my Hello Dolly playbill from when Bernadette Peters was Dolly. I did not know that my heart needed that to see Bernadette as Dolly. Like she's my ultimate favorite everything. And her performance was literally breathtaking. I gasped several times, especially when she was speaking to her husband. Like she brought such a range to that character that I wasn't expecting, just because I've always seen Dolly as just a showy thing, you know, but fun and lovely. But there was this depth all of a sudden with Bernadette that I Victor Garber, oh my gosh. It was a magical, magical night.
Do you happen to have any ticket stubs or anything in there?
In here?
Yeah, in the playbill.
I don't think I have a ticket stub. Oh no, but there was an understudy on for Irene Malloy.
Oh.
And I love that. I love because I started out as a standby. So I love, I know exactly what's happening backstage and it's magic. So I love going to the theater and opening the playbill and a piece of paper falls out to tell you there's something really special about to happen.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've talked about this before, but I'm not aware of it. What, I mean, your first time going on as Glinda when you were a standby, what was that like? What is that like for you going on stage?
What an entrance.
Yeah, it was terrifying because I was right out of college. I was a standby, so I didn't really know anybody. Our dressing room at the Gershwin, the standbys, we're kind of separate, you know. I had 2 hours notice my Broadway debut. And so I ran to the theater and Idina Menzel walked in the room and she was like, "Hey, is there anything you want to go over?" And I was like, ugh. You know, I was so nervous and I was a baby. It was such a gigantic show, you know. At that point, I think it was like 11 months into the run, like 10 or 11 months into the run, something like that.
That's a long time though for you to just stand by.
No. I didn't start out with them. I stood by for 2 months before I went on.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I'm saying like since the, from the opening of the show.
Yeah.
So it was a huge, I mean, it still is huge, but so it was nerve wracking, but Idina did something that I will never forget. She came in, she was like, "Hey, is there anything you want to go over?" And I freaked out and she was like, "You know what? Let's just go out there and make the show our own tonight." And I'll never, ever, ever forget it. It was such, and it might seem so small to people who don't understand how, understand that situation. She could have walked in there and said, "Hey, at this point, I need you to be standing here. I need you to do this like that. I need you to say this like that." And she would have been completely within her right to do it. But instead, she gave me the opportunity and allowed me really to breathe and like be present with her and enjoy it, or at least try to, you know. And it was magical. By the end of the night, I felt like we'd been through something together, and I will never forget that enormous act of kindness and generosity.
And I bet you've been able to pay that forward later on in your career, right?
I try.
That's great. I'm interested to know if you have another playbill there that you want to share too. Like, do you have another playbill with you that you want to share? Like a second one.
I have a couple of them. So I have my friend Kat McPhee in Waitress.
Oh, that's a good one to bring up.
How do you guys know each other?
Yeah.
Well, you know.
Mark seemed to be excited over that, too.
Go back. She was magical in this.
What? She was so phenomenal.
Magical. We all know she's remarkably talented, but another instance where she just took my breath away. She was, sorry, chainsaws are going again. She was magic. I was so proud of her, and it was just so easy. Everything with her is... She's so cool and she's so easy. It's awesome. It's awesome.
That's amazing.
Because on Smash, you know, she played a character that sort of, she had a stay in this one, not one, but, you know, she basically played this one character who had a certain way that made you think, well, that is who Kat McPhee is, but she's not. As anyone who follows her on social media now, you know, she's got a really big sense of humor. But when I saw her in Waitress, you know, I hoped it didn't seem like a backhanded insult to go like, when I was so overwhelmed by her.
Yeah.
Because even having done 2 years on the Smash and had her sing songs I had just written, like right next to me there, but Waitress was just, you know, funny and dramatic and also the stamina to sing that
marathon
8 times a week. Oh my God.
Yeah. She's remarkable. Yeah.
Do you guys together, Mark and Megan, do you share a memory together on Smash that is kind of unforgettable that you can talk about when you're, you know, in 50 years from now? Like, do you have anything that you share like that?
I do remember recording "Let Me Be Your Star."
Oh,
I remember that night in the studio up in the West 50s, And we didn't know what we, you know, what this was going to be necessarily. And I didn't know, is this the right key, or is this the right tempo, or is this okay? I mean, somewhere there's a demo of me singing, if you can imagine.
I think
me
I have it.
Oh yeah. Boy, it's not pretty. So this was kind of the first moment. And although I guess you girls have met by that time, but it was very embryonic.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very, very new. Yeah, but it was exciting. I cherish every memory that I have in the studio with Mark and Scott.
What is that like? You know, working. Were you familiar, I'm sure, with their work and looked up to them?
Yeah, absolutely. And I was so nervous the first time I came to their studio. I just wanted them to like me. I was so nervous. And I'm always afraid too that when I'm nervous that I come off as like, I maybe aloof or something too, because I just worry about everything. Anyway, those are my fondest memories, are being in the studio with Mark and Scott and witnessing their genius and getting, quite frankly, the profound honor to be the first to voice so many of their songs.
I mean, sorry, Mark, go for it.
No, just, you know, imagine the thrill for Scott and I. I mean, we were writing one or two songs a week. And then to know that we had these two performers who were just going to, you know, be phenomenal. We would write a song. I would send Megan this demo of me singing. And then she would, like, take the subway down to our apartment. It's not our apartment. It used to be mine and Scott's apartment. Our lives have changed. But we still work there every day at Scott's apartment. And we have a soundproof studio in the back of the apartment. We were very lucky when we were looking for an apartment. Someone, after 2 years of searching, told us about this guy who was selling his apartment who had built soundproof studio because he was a jingle singer, jingle writer. So it's a phenomenal place to have and to get to work. You know, when Megan would come over, it's soundproof. And so you really feel like you're in this little cocoon and we could just relax. And also because of the nature of modern stuff, you know, the girls could learn the song almost on the spot and I'm just recording everything. So by the end of the day, I have, you know, the learning of the song all the way through the phenomenal performances. But sometimes there's something in that rehearsal that I can, you know, pull from. Anyway, I'm just blabbering. But
I'm interested to know how that worked. How did that work with the TV aspect? Had you guys ever worked in a TV capacity before, both of you? Had you both been on any sort of television?
I worked at Saturday Night Live for a few years. 1 year completely, like literally I was a full-time job. Other years I was just freelance. So I certainly knew about working for
the
live
pace.
The pace and live television. But nothing could prepare anyone for what Smash was like.
Yeah.
On many levels.
Yeah. I'd only done like guest starring stuff and I hadn't done any like series regular things. Like this was the most intense thing that I'd been a part of on film at all. Yeah.
And it was so beautiful too.
Oh,
I mean,
my God.
What you guys collaborated on, it's, you know, there was a comment by my boyfriend, Remy. He mentions, do you two realize how many drag queens lip sync to Let Me Be Your Star? I mean, it has permeated so much. Our friend Paige Turner, who is a very popular Hell's Kitchen, queen from Hell's Kitchen and has a huge following, does Let Me Be Your Star, and it's like and it's show stopping every time because that number is so perfect and it all comes together so beautifully, and it's just such a Smash is amazing, and it's such a moment in history, and there's so many people that love it. And
I remember watching the series premiere like back when I was in high school and just being like, oh my gosh, this is what I want to see on TV as somebody who loved theater and was so young and not knowing how the business worked and stuff like that. It was very, very, very
the moment profound. My own moment of memory of that kind of thing, it was because we would watch it, I guess, every week. I mean, we'd certainly seen it. We've been working on it. I've scored a lot of it, so I knew what the whole show was going to be looking like. But Scott and I, when we watched, I think the fourth episode, when Megan did Let's Be Bad, and that number, the whole production of the number and Megan's performance, we were both just like, I can't believe that. That was just on TV. Wow. Can you imagine if you were in high school and that was just on TV? Oh my God, we just couldn't believe it.
That was my favorite thing to do, like hands down on the show. That song was just epic, and the choreography and the costumes. I mean, it was all just, yeah.
Mark, sorry, go for it, Megan. Sorry,
I didn't. Oh, no. Excuse me 1 second. My best friend just came over. I can't let her sit outside. I'm just gonna let her in.
Sure. Hey, bring her on.
No, girl, we can talk about me some more.
Yes, no.
I do have a question for you, Mark. Sorry, Brian. I do have a very specific question. I mean, it's like, you're talking about seeing things on TV, but you know, you have something like the Sweeney Sisters on SNL, which that's a huge joke.
I was just thinking, wouldn't it be fun if someone did the Sweeney Sisters doing the songs from Smash? Why haven't drag queens done that?
I don't know, but that needs to happen. Get on it.
Now, you know, I have playbill memories, even though I don't have playbills with me.
Well, that's what I wanted to get to next. I have some playbills that you were a part of, so I'd like to maybe discuss them from your perspective.
Very specific question later on regarding Hairspray, but take it away.
You want to go for Hairspray?
Who, me?
Well, yeah, you choose. We're going to call it your playbill memory for this one.
Yes.
Well, one was a big, shiny, bright hit, and the other one was a miserable flop. So,
how dare you?
Well, you know.
It wasn't a miserable
when
flop.
When I look at it.
How dare you? I loved Catch Me If You Can.
I did too.
But my Judaism, when I look at those two, I go, oh, yeah, well, that. Look, even the playbills themselves. Look at that.
One is colorful, a little late in the
smile,
run.
And the other one looks kind of funereal. That's when you know when the playbills go to black and white.
I know. That's when we know.
Well, honestly, I'm so glad you brought that up.
Saving money.
Because that's why I went to go see it, because I knew it was going to be closing. And, you know, I just wanted to go see it. So I rushed it with my dad back in, let's see, I do have the ticket here. I think it was 2011. August 14th, 2011. And I remember rushing it, and we got these horrible nosebleed seats all the way up in the mezzanine. And at intermission, my dad was like, there's front row seats that are open. We're going there. And we changed and moved down there. Don't do that, guys. You should always ask an usher. But I enjoyed the show.
I did too.
I mean, luckily it was nominated for Best Musical. But it obviously ended not the way any of us wanted it to. But I mean, I have the memory of those songs and those performers nailing those songs, Aaron and Carrie, you know, that's of course, I don't mean to be so morose. It's just my nature.
I judge Florida State Thespians every year, and it's a big festival of 11,000 high schoolers competing with theater. And I request solo music, of course, because, you know, look at me. And so many young performers sing Fly, Fly Away. And I love that song. It's such a brilliant, brilliant song.
And look, Norbert Leo Butz. I mean, what about that? I do can remember like that number stopping the show every night. I mean, it was like, those are phenomenal memories.
Yeah.
Specific question about Hairspray before you go into it, because there's a lot to talk about Hairspray. But I'm really interested because this is the type of artist that I am, doing multiple things at once and sometimes multiple things within the project. You are executive producer and the writer of Hairspray. What was your experience like with that? How was that for you in that creative process?
Well, I mean, I think Scott and I were executive producers of the movie of the musical.
Oh, the movie of the musical.
Yeah. On Broadway, we were just the writers. But luckily, on Broadway, the last place where the writer is the king, where you have your Dramatists Guild contract that says you have to be able to hear the songs you've written in performance. So it's a wonderful place to be writing, Broadway is. And, Hairspray was, I mean, I've talked about it a lot. It was just the ultimate dream come true. beyond. It was the dream that you have while you're dreaming. you're dreaming in the dream. And even that is more, it's even more than you could have ever imagined.
It's amazing.
And hopefully we will be able to see this again soon. I was supposed to go to London this past April, and we had tickets to see it that got canceled. But I saw that they announced today that they're coming back, or they announced recently that they're coming back next April. They're going to try again.
You know, I just saw over here on the right, I wonder if my friend Jamie is still listening and watching. My friend Jamie, who when I was in New Jersey, young teenagers, we grew up, we were friends. We were like, me and Megan have like the same relationship as me and Jamie had when we were 13 or 14, just loving harmony and shows. And her mother dated Robert Preston. And somehow we got that message back to Robert Preston. So when we went to, I think the opening night, maybe not, of Mac and Mabel. And so that's when I was thinking of playable memories. Wow. Like, I have the memory of Bernadette Peters, Megan, you'll appreciate, singing Time Heals Everything on opening night. And I think I was like 13 or 14 or something. I swear to you, I can still hear it in my head when she sang, you know, Time Heals Everything. You know, and I don't, maybe there were little mics back then, but it was really the sound of her voice on those notes filling the theater. I can still hear it. I can still feel it and hear it. So that's my playable memory.
I have a horrifying memory from Smash that has to do with you and Bernadette. I was coming to a recording session with you to record what I thought was just my part of the duet that me and Bernadette were doing. Did I mention she's my hero? Like my ultimate all-time hero of everything? I was late coming from set, and our I was in the van going to your house, and we got stuck behind every like garbage truck. Getting stuck behind a garbage truck in New York is like one of the worst things.
It's a plague of death.
Anything. I ended up being so late for that session. I felt so bad, and then I walked in and died because Bernadette was there and they were waiting for me. It seemed like I didn't care about anything when it's the opposite. And I was just mortified. I had, yeah, it's one of my worst memories from Smash, because I didn't want anybody to think that I didn't care, because it was quite the opposite.
But I remember that day. I mean, you can imagine me and Megan and Scott just trading glances every now and then, going, look.
It's happening?
It's Bernadette Peters.
Yeah.
We're in this room with Bernadette Peters just singing our song, or I'm singing a duet with Bernadette Peters. Yeah. And you just never, that doesn't get, you don't get used to that.
No. Yeah.
Did Bernadette ever give you some like motherly advice while working with her? Did she ever like, was there ever a moment of like connection with her that?
Yeah. Here's the thing about Bernadette. She's even more kind than she is talented. If that's, if you can even like imagine, she is like old school supportive. Like she will be on set, even in like a benefit, you know, she will sit through everybody else's sound check and just listen and support. You know, and not like give you notes or anything, but like she'll just be there to support and clap for you. And anytime we would talk about anything, she would show up the next day and like bring me jewelry that she thought that I would like, or that my character would like because of something I said. She would bring me clothes that I would never fit into because she's Bernadette Peters and I'm not. But the point was, is that she was showing me that she was listening to what I was saying, and she was, you know, engaging in a very deep and supportive level. And yeah, if everybody tried to be like Bernadette Peters and Dolly Parton, the world would be a better place for sure.
Thank you, Megan. That's amazing. Mark, I have another specific question. Were you there for Johnny Carson's last show?
Yes, you've got to do better research. I'm sorry, what? Michael.
What's wrong?
I was there. I was part of it.
I know. I'm saying. I want to know.
Do you think I was playing from another galaxy? Sorry. No, you'll edit this out. I know this is live, but still, you'll edit that part out.
That was me trying to make like a good, just like kind comparison. But thank you for calling me out. I love
it. It's all right.
Thank you.
What was it like being part of Johnny Carson?
Yes, oh, well, that's a better question.
No, that nothing will ever compare to that. And of course, people your age, I'm surprised that you even know what that was. But
Michael knows all those older things that I have.
But at that time, Johnny Carson retiring, he was the king of show business, and everyone, the most famous people were all dying to get onto those final weeks. And then Bet called and said, "Oh my God, he's asked me to be the last guest." It wasn't actually the last show; it was the penultimate show. The last show was just him on a stool talking, but everyone thinks of it as the last show, and she was the last guest. So what a responsibility. I've written something. You can go to my website, markshama.com, and there's a little like memory piece of that whole night. Nothing will ever, you know. It was like floating, I mean, I could tell you the whole story, but it would take, 20 minutes. And
that's what's so interesting about so many memories we hear from people. They have these responses where they can't put words to their memories.
Those are the best memories where,
Yeah.
If you're a really good writer, you can hopefully try to summon up what that was like if you write about it or be a storyteller. But that was the peak.
That's amazing.
What do you guys?
As large as my ego is, mostly if I hear something I've worked on, I go, why didn't I fix that? Or why did I choose that key? But I can watch that last moment with Bet. I mean, the last 15 minutes of that show, but the last 5 minutes and go, that's perfect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And it's very rare, even with my ego. I mean, it's perfect.
Yes. It is. Thank you for putting me in my place. And you're right. What's funny is now I have you and Bette Midler who have both yelled at me before, because when I photographed her, I had 30 seconds and I had to change one very, 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 very simple thing. And she goes, "Hurry up." And I was so happy because she yelled at me as if like my aunt would yell at me. So thank you for yelling at me. That makes me very happy. And now I could just
yell at you too. So
we're gonna play a game. We don't need you to yell at him too. It's okay.
No. Thank you. But I can only take one per day. So
at this point in the live stream event, we played Broadway themed memory games. While these games are tons of fun, they're best enjoyed in the video format of our episode. If you'd like to see the game portion of this episode, visit My Broadway Memory on YouTube or Facebook. Now back to My Broadway Memory.
Now, we've come to the point in our show where we're winding down and we'll carry on with our nights. But do you want to share anything, like anything exciting happening, and you want to talk about anything? This is your time for you to speak and say hi. So
besides becoming a first grade teacher, do you have any other news or any other events you're going to be doing?
How are your lives?
So exciting. I just ordered all kinds of posters for my classroom.
Oh.
And getting her computer ready and meeting my computer. And
Do you put on different clothes? Do you put your hair up like in a little school mom bun?
I'll let you think that I do. But I actually, since quarantine began, I especially because once it started, we launched right into distance learning. And every morning we do the same thing. I get fully ready. I put my lashes on just like everybody else. And I curl my hair and because otherwise I just don't feel like myself. So every day I fully put myself together before we head out and do our thing. Yeah.
That's amazing.
No, I do a bunch of animation. So while all of my concerts have either been, luckily most of them have been pushed to later next year. Some of them have been canceled, but thank goodness I have several different cartoons that I work on that I'm able to record at home. We have a home studio. So I'm able to have, I'm thanking all my lucky stars because so many artists are struggling so hard, and we are on that path, because I mean, we don't know when these live performances will come back into our lives. Mm-hmm. But I am thanking my lucky stars that I have these jobs to hold on to. I know that it makes me an extremely lucky person to have that right now. So I'm super grateful. Mm. Yeah.
And Mark, do you have anything? I know you're going to be a part of the virtual gala that we were talking about earlier.
No, basically all I do is eat.
Good. Beautiful.
No, Scott and I wrote a song for a friend's animated show also. It seems like, I mean, animation right now is the only place in show business that is...
That's continuing.
Just continuing and thriving.
Yeah.
So we wrote this one big number for our friend's show. He's written a show about the royal family. It's based on his Instagram, where he does an Instagram as Prince George.
Okay, look.
Here they come.
My kids just came.
That's okay.
I love it.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Cameo.
So we've been recording that and doing the orchestration for that right here. So that's that. I mean, it's been nice to work for the last 5 days, but basically, I've been doing nothing but just wondering what's going to happen to this world.
Yeah. What? Yeah.
Thank you both so much for coming on My Broadway Memory. I'm sure our listeners and audience members were so excited to see you both for a little bit. And where can we find you guys on social media?
Yeah.
At Megan Hilty. That's it.
I don't know, Mark Shaman, whatever it is. Yeah. Luckily, I'm the only one. Mark with a C. There's really no other one. So you'll find me.
Beautiful.
Good. I think you have an underscore in between Mark and Shaman. So, you know, we just for the God is in the details, I guess. And,
yes.
You know, just making sure we can find you. But, you know, usually at the end of every episode, we announce next week's guests. And we will, though we are still working out guests for next week, we will say that they are from Jagged Little Pill. So if you love Jagged Little Pill, be sure to watch our show next week. And always, you know, follow us on social media, you know,
and watch that, the, you know, the French Woods.
I
know you mentioned in the beginning of the show, but you want to mention that again? Cause I know that's important.
That's August 16th at 7 PM streaming on starsinthehouse.com. You'll find the virtual gala, Moments in the Woods, which is raising funds for the Hancock, French Woods Arts Alliance, which helps get young artists into schools, and it's a really life-changing nonprofit. So watch it, donate. It's like a telethon, so you'll be able to donate in the moment. You can even donate now. So it's going to be a great night. So mark your calendars for August 16th at 7 p.m. at starsinthehouse.com.
And as always, thank you to our amazing team at the Broadway Podcast Network, Dori Berenstein, Alan Seals, Brittany Bigelow, and Katie Rosen. We even had some musical underscore there this time.
Yes.
I loved it.
We love it. We can go out with a bang. Thank you, Megan. Thank you, Mark. This is a marvelous episode. You guys are great. Thank you so much.
Mwah. Bye.
Be safe.
Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Suffs celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.